Coach, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, as always, technical difficulties. Welcome to Sports Club. I'm Jeremy the Impact York. Joining me is Coach Haywood Hill. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. So.
I'm doing better now that I figured out why you couldn't hear me. But, yeah, we've got a lot we're going to get into. It is a jam-packed Sports Club. We're going to talk about all kinds of things, but I think we need to immediately just go after the elephant in the room and talk about why Jerry Jones versus the world is an actual thing. Now, this broke at the end of last week's show, and before myself or Reggie could get into it, we wanted to take part of the week, make sure you and Cody could get a chance to read over all this, because I wanted to see exactly what was going on as well. Basically, this is what's happening as far as what I understand. Jerry Jones, who was upset and felt like he was misled and that the public and some other people were misled by the league about the Ezekiel Elliott situation. Also, he's got some other issues somewhere with Roger Goodell and him getting a contract extension. At one point, Jerry Jones was on the committee that was deciding this extension. And also on this committee was Arthur Blank from Atlanta, John Mara and Steve Tisch from the Giants, the Chiefs' Clark Hunt, Pittsburgh's Art Rooney, Bob McNair from Houston, and Robert Kraft from New England, a.k.a. the usually most outspoken, more powerful leaders of the National Football League. And he is now apparently suing this committee, not because he was kicked out of the committee, but over the extension and over some other things with Goodell. Feel free to weigh in anywhere in that.
Well, it seems like it's a matrix of things. And I'm not
right.
quite sure as to what Mr. Jones' angle may be. I think that in the allegations of him suing, but I don't think the public knows what that is, and I don't think that we're quite privy to everything, because if you look at it, the committee hasn't even spoken on it as of yet. So we're not quite
right.
sure. And I think in the coming weeks, with all of them being owners, they have some other pressing issues right now, and I'm sure they'll deal with this probably after the Super Bowl. But it's going to be interesting to see as this begins to, as the layers are peeled back and it begins to unfold, what the whole lawsuit is about when we get to the nuts and bolts. But more importantly, I found it quite intriguing that Mr. Jones did this early. You know, I mean, he kind of called out some of his constituents early, which was kind of bizarre to me. But again,
oh yeah.
I'm assuming there's some kind of method to the madness of all of this, and I'm sure that they'll somehow get this resolved.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And, you know, kind of the weird thing is Arthur and Robert Kraft and Bob McNair are the three guys he's closest to of all the owners. He kind of took Arthur under his wing the same way that I just forgot the Raiders, former Raiders owner. But the way he took Jerry under his wing and kind of got him into everything. And it's just, I agree with you. There's more to this. It's just for some reason right now, this is all that we're really hearing about it. I don't think it has to do with Zeke. I think that was his way into this argument, whatever he's trying to say. Some people speculate, and when I say some people, it is usually people who are not in the know. It's usually nothing personal to them. But we don't practice it here. But it's journalists trying to seek all the other possibilities and be the first to bring this up. The owner, the 31 owners would technically have the right to try to force Jerry to sell or to step down and, I guess, let Steven take over. But I think we all know that's not going to happen, right?
No, I don't see that happening anytime in the near future. I think that when Mr. Jones is ready to retire his seat, he'll do so willfully. The other owner that you were speaking of was the late great Al Davis.
Al Davis, that's it.
Yeah, like I said, it's just too early in its infancy in my opinion, to even discuss, because I do feel like you do, Jeremy, that it's much more behind the scene versus what's being presented right now. Something like that normally goes on behind heavily closed doors, so. It's going to be really interesting to see what angle this takes as it begins to, again, unravel itself down in weeks to come.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. Like I said, part of the reason we didn't talk about it last week was because it dropped right towards the end of our show. And, you know, we're very good about saying, you know what, even if we're the last ones to talk about it, by the time our next show rolls around, we want the time to properly – we don't want to get anything wrong or jump to conclusions. We want to dig into this. And that's why I wanted to re-bring it up now, kind of bring everybody up on what we know to this point. And, you know, for the most part, I guess we are going to table this until the next coming weeks when we try to figure out exactly what is going on and what the next step could be, because this thing – is just a jumbled mess. It's alphabet soup, basically, and we have no idea what letter's coming out next.
I agree.
But, like I said, we'll table that and move on and try to talk about some more positive things, like the San Francisco 49ers getting their first win. I mean, you've been a head coach before. What's it like to get that first win, whether it comes quick or whether it comes later on?
It's always exciting. Especially with what San Francisco has had to undertake with a new general manager and a head coach, and some things that were taking place as they shift their roster around, losing injuries. So it was just a breath of fresh air that they always felt comfortable and felt confident in the personnel that they had, and they finally were able to just pull it all together and bring the win that they needed. It was a much-needed win for San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, it was. And all the videos from the locker room and just see the smiles, and the best one to me is when John Lynch, it wasn't even when they embraced, but it was when John Lynch and head coach Kyle Shanahan looked at each other and kind of had this grin on their face, like, you know, not only is this the first of many, but it's starting to work. We're starting to get some of these people, you know, to use the great business book, Good to Great. It's not just about getting the right people on the bus, it's getting them in the right seats. They're starting to get some of these players and some of these pieces in the right situations and in the right places, and you can tell it's starting to pay off.
I agree. I think that the players are now buying into what they have. They realize that's a team sport. A lot of times we tend to focus on the stars of a team, but once you become mm-hmm. a team, and that's the biggest part of it, is a team sport. I think sometimes that gets forgotten, that once a team comes together and they start to form, and they start to rely on, and more importantly, they begin to trust and believe in each other, then, you know, although it probably won't happen this year for them for sure, don't count San Francisco out of some, you know, at least a couple more wins before this season is out, because winning is contagious, just like losing can be contagious. So now that they've been bit by the winning bug, they know what that now feels like. They know how to prepare for that now. Not that they were not doing it, you know, prior. But now they know what that feeling is like. So now it basically just energizes the team to get back to practice and want that feeling again on Sunday or the next time that they play.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to stay on the 49ers. And obviously the next time Cody's back on, I'll get his take since he's out in the Bay Area. But, you know, they did trade and get Jimmy Garoppolo, and they have admitted that there's no current plan for Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think they quite – for one – I don't know that they knew they could get him. I think they were just calling around. They were seeing where people were at on certain players or certain things right before the deadline. The famous story goes that John Lynch, and he did confirm this. I heard him on another show confirm it. He did call Bill Belichick and say, so is Garoppolo available? And when Belichick said, you know, Jimmy's not really available right now, that he said, okay, is Tom available? And Belichick went, do you know what you just asked me? He goes, well, yeah, you said one's not available. Is the other? And he just goes, no, Tom is not available whatsoever. And he goes, all right, we'd take a second for Jimmy. And then that's how it basically happened. So I think Jimmy kind of fell in their lap. I do still feel like there is a chance they go after Kirk Cousins in the offseason if he's available. And in the process, Jimmy Garoppolo could be playing somewhere else. Because if you're Garoppolo, there's no reason to – try to get a contract extension because he is at the end of his deal, his rookie deal. The best thing to do is to point to the franchise tag and go, that's where my number starts, is where the franchise tag is. So you can either tag me, you can let me hit the open market, or we can talk about an extension, but my number is going to start at 22, 24 million, whatever that cap number is.
Yeah, I agree. And being that he's coming from a championship team, it's always mm-hmm. going to give him that longevity. So, it's not a question of whether or not he can play. I mean, that's been proven in the system that he's been in. The question now is the next team that he plays for, does that system work for him and his abilities? And I think that's kind of a nice insurance policy to have. I think he very well might still be with the 49ers. He's a great insurance policy for them right now. And that's not putting out his talents. It's just that's just what it is right now. They took him as an insurance policy. So if anything, if he's not with the 49ers, they most definitely will be holding on to him to try to shop a better deal down the stretch, if not for a couple of the players that they might want to put on defense or to strengthen themselves receiver-wise offensively, then I think what they'll probably do is look at, possibly draft picks. So, again, I don't think he's anchored per se in San Francisco as of yet. So I don't want people to get comfortable with that quarterback being there just as of yet.
Right. Plus, C.J. Beathard did win the game for him. He has been playing pretty good. He's actually the second most famous person in his family. His brother is actually a country music star, has a pretty cool song. If I'm not mistaken, his brother's song relates a relationship to a college football game between Tennessee and Alabama, and only country music can pull that one off. It's a pretty good song, though. I give him credit. I've heard it a few times. It's a pretty good song. So, shout out to the Beathard family. You guys are very talented. For anybody who didn't see the Vikings versus Redskins game, or if you just saw highlights, or if you just heard of it, by far this is the game of the week. It might be one of the bigger games of the year, not just because of the impact of it. It was the heavyweight fight that we all enjoy watching. We were lucky enough, at least in on the East Coast here, to get the feed and see it. You had Adam Thielen really show how great of a receiver he is, and he's the number two receiver in Minnesota behind Stephon Diggs, who is by far a number one. They still have Kyle Rudolph. They got all kinds of weapons. The thing that the Vikings really showed me was that Case Keenum is a number one quarterback, and he could start for most teams in this league. He led them to the big comeback. Kirk Cousins pretty much put the Redskins on his back and tried, but I think overall they lost by a couple scores. So, the Vikings keep rolling, and the Redskins have to decide if they actually want to pay Kirk Cousins. Were you able to catch this game?
I was able to catch a little bit of the game. I do agree that Keenum really was a pleasant surprise for Minnesota, and now Minnesota has, again, as I use the term loosely, an insurance policy. Now they know what's behind Bridgewater. I think Bridgewater is still their guy, but I think they're going to try to find some type of healthy relationship because now they know, this kid can play. And again, he stepped in. He did a great job against Washington. So now the question is what do you do with Bridgewater? I don't think they're going to get rid of Bridgewater. I think they find a way to try to work this out. And if you're smart, you kind of look at what New England's been doing all these years. They kind of have depth at the position now. So Bridgewater's ready to come back to the field of play. I don't think I would rush him back, to be quite honest, because I spoke earlier and you asked me the question about, when you're coaching, what you're looking for, you most definitely are looking for chemistry. And I'm not saying they don't have it with Teddy Bridgewater. What I am saying is you have something that you've had to struggle through the last season or two at that position more especially, and now you got that ball rolling with the weapons that are there. You don't. If it ain't broke, you don't kind of fix it. If you know what I mean,
right?
You kind of find a way to just kind of work through that and see how you can slowly get Bridgewater back to the field of play because he does need to take some snaps and get himself back into rotation. But you don't want to rush that back and possibly damage your chemistry. So it's just trying to find the healthy balance between the two.
Right. I kind of liken it without any kind of detrimental thing here, just for the sake of example. It's kind of like having a pair of shoes that you're starting to wear in pretty good and a brand new pair of shoes. You decide to swap to the new shoes and you break the laces. So you immediately swap back. You go to the ones you're more familiar with until you get some new laces. You get those new laces, but you don't want to just immediately jump back because you're starting to get really comfortable with that old, more worn-in pair of shoes there. So it's kind of what they're looking at here, and I agree it's going to be about chemistry. But if they get up by a couple scores over somebody, I would expect to see Teddy Bridgewater have a couple snaps.
I agree with you. I expect something similar to take place for them versus them trying to rush back. All players are warriors. All players want to be on the field of play. But players also understand how the chemistry works. So I know he's anxious. He's not played since – throw the ball since 2015, and he wants to get back at it. He was able to overcome such a devastating injury, which normally would have been a career-ending injury, and mm-hmm. fight his way back, you know, back into health and back into the field of play. So I agree with you. I think that if I'm Minnesota, that's the game plan I'm looking at. I'm going to slowly integrate him back into the system versus trying to rush him back into the system, and you know, he just hasn't been there for a minute at no fault of his own.
These guys are Warriors.
They are Warriors. I like that call. That's exactly what they are. You know, we're going to kind of get into I'm not going to – it is sad to a point, but it has a happy ending, so just stick with us. Wide receiver for the 49ers, as we go back to the 49ers for a second, Marquise Goodwin. Him and his wife were expecting a child. Unfortunately, things didn't go the way they should have, and unfortunately that child didn't make it. Just a few hours later, he plays in this game on Sunday, and he's able to catch a touchdown, and he broke down, and he pointed to the sky, and he did some really cool things when he scored over the weekend. Once again, we'll dip into your coaching and also just your history in general around this game, even as an agent and such. Have you ever gone through this with a player you knew?
I can't say that I've personally gone through such a situation with players. Tragedies, yes, but not to the magnitude of losing a child. I would like to also commend Mr. Goodwin on the article that he wrote. And I think it was in the form of Facebook or Twitter. It was in some type of social media setting that he extended out how he felt and his personal thoughts. And we also share something in common that we're both members of a fraternity called Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated. So, Mr. Goodwin did a great job. But the thing I want to point out right now in this whole situation is that often fans and society in general tend to forget that athletes are humans. And mm-hmm. for him to allow society, if you will, the fans, if you will, into such a personal space like that in such a short period of time that took place was incredible. And so I would like for people just to keep his family in their prayers, but more importantly, also remember that, you know, these athletes are human beings too, and they have, you know, they have the same things that go on in everybody else's daily lives, in their lives as well. So, again, it was just a very heartfelt statement that he made, and then for him to be able to come out and play the game the way that he did, and the touchdown would just, you know, just add that much more onto what he does. And then the celebration and his celebratory statement after that just spoke highly of who he was, and just it was incredible to me to see him do that.
Yeah, it definitely was. And as we were talking before the show even, it's moments like this, like you said, when the curtain gets pulled back and you realize that that guy that's entertaining you on a sports platform or entertainment platform or any other platform, they are human. And this usually brings the fan connection closer to the game. And they really start – when you start to understand what these guys are going through is sometimes just the same thing you or somebody else you know is going through. It makes you really appreciate what they actually do when they perform.
I agree, 100%.
But I told you guys, it has a good ending. Everybody is still healthy and good, and we're going to just move on. Vontaze Burfict, and before people jump to conclusions here, I'm actually going to be on a different side on this one, and I think the league is actually agreeing with me. Apparently, during a scuffle or an altercation or I don't know what to really call it. It wasn't a whole lot of much of nothing. During the Bengals game, he made contact with the referee, which is automatic flag, automatic ejection. That happens no matter what. If you bump into a referee, if it's anything more than a pat on the back that they know is coming or a handshake, then most of the time you're tossed. He was tossed from the game. The league looks at it. And they say, you know what, it's really technically, it's just the letter of the law says that you're kicked out. He didn't have any kind of bad intentions. So he actually didn't get fined. And I got to agree, when I went back and watched it, I don't think that in any way did he intend to do it. He was not making a malicious motion whatsoever. I think he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time and unfortunately got kicked out.
Yeah, that's one of those tough situations because you're always in proximity of the refs. That's I often wonder what would happen if a player kind of pushed the player into the referee. What would the call be then? You know, we have a lot of technology out there. But it's kind of a slippery slope. You know, he's had some situations in the past that have hurt him with, you know, as a player. And sometimes that kind of stuff can kind of overshadow you. But in this case, I don't think that there was anything maliciously that he was trying in his intent. I don't think there was anything malicious in his intent. And, again, that's going to be kind of interesting because, like I said, you know, what if you have the scenario where a player pushes a player into the ref and let's say the ref back, you know, let's say the player and the ref touch back-to-back, okay? He has no idea he's going to be pushed or what have you. So then based on the way the rule is now, he's going to get ejected anyway, you know, whether it's intended or not. So I think that's something they'll look at. I think they'll start to allow the referees to have a little more discretion with that versus just such a hard line rule on it. I do understand the reason why you have that rule in place because, again, refs don't have equipment on and things of that nature and can suffer, you know, some injuries themselves. So it's all about protecting everyone that's on the field of play. But, again, like I said, you know, I think what they'll start to do now, they'll start really taking into consideration what is considered malicious with intent and without.
Right. I mean, you know, nothing personal. I'm not a dirty player, and I know you're not a dirty player either. But if there is a perfect style player on the other squad, and like you said, the referee's back's turned, maybe I give that guy a slight nudge into him and just see what happens. I mean, if another referee were to witness it, that's one thing. But it's really hard for seven guys to control the 22 on the field and the 100 other people on the sidelines that they're not going to see everything. I think at some point we're going to see somebody try to take advantage of this. And I hope it's in good fun and they're able to laugh about it. Nothing stupid happens, but I do agree with you. At some point, I think somebody's going to, like a perfect, is going to accidentally get pushed into them and all hell might break loose.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about if it's one of your marquee players. So, you know, you're talking about someone. Let's just give a scenario. And I'm just using this as one of those scenarios. Tom Brady is standing there. He gets pushed by somebody else. He bumps the referee. The referee falls on the ground.
Turns around to see Tom. Yeah.
Right. Is he ejected for that? So at least we're putting it out there. We're giving a platform of putting it out there for something for the competition committee to think about or the rules committee, I'm saying, as well in the off season. You know, how do you now determine what's malicious? Because if I'm not mistaken, last week on the show you were talking about hockey.
Yeah.
And when we were talking about A.J. Green and some of the things that took place the previous week, hockey is the only sport outside of baseball that allows you to kind of blow that steam, you know.
Right,
Without a whole lot of infractions, you know, that come behind it. In football, you don't have that. You know, in basketball, you don't have that. So, again, you know, I'm just using that scenario. If you're in the Super Bowl, you have Mr. Brady get pushed by the opposing team's linebacker or whomever. He knocks the ref to the ground. Does he get ejected?
Right.
Something to think about between them and the playoffs.
Well, even if the player didn't do it on purpose, you know, let's say it's Atlanta, and let's say Dontari Poe, who is by far a mild-mannered person, he would not ever want to do this on purpose. Let's say he's coming after Tom on a play. Tom lets go of the ball. He pulls up and just kind of halfway, just kind of barely nudges him and taps him on the back like, you know, I'm going to get you next time or something like that. And then they accidentally both hit the referee. Referee turns around. All he sees is Tom Brady. Yeah, that could be interesting because it doesn't necessarily have to be the defensive player on purpose or the offensive player on purpose. That's something that I hope the competition committee is looking at.
Right, because that scenario can very well play itself out, especially when you get to the back end of the schedule where it's a lot of intensity to make the playoffs. You know, as we talk later down in the show, we're talking about scenarios of where teams really got to win a lot of football games in a short amount of time. So the level of intensity is going to turn up now, because I like the way the scheduling is done with a lot of your divisional games on the back end, so you truly can now squeeze out who's the better in the division. So now things are going to get tight in those type of scenarios that we spoke of, refs getting bumps, you know, a little more physicality, extra physicality coming out of players now because they're trying to make the playoffs. It's just going to be very interesting to see if they try to come up with something on the back end where they still have the season to monitor it, or do they wait till the playoffs, have something after the season and as they go into the playoffs, something in place, because we just named a scenario where you could lose two marquee athletes, you know, simultaneously on a play.
Right. Yeah, we all know that they're listening out there. So Roger Goodell, and I'm not sure who's on the competition committee nowadays, because it used to be Jeff Fisher, but we all know probably because of the party I threw here the day it happened. We all know Jeff Fisher's not employed in the league currently. So he used to head it up all the time, but I'm not sure who heads it up. That might be something we look into and see what they do.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that.
That I'm going to make a note of that. We're going to revisit that, because I'm going to find out who's on the competition committee and maybe reach out for a statement. Who knows? Maybe they'll get back to us. But let's move on. Let's go to we all know Richard Sherman, who was playing with a – let me just throw this out here. People think he up and snapped his Achilles out of nowhere. No, he's been playing on a bad Achilles for at least half of the season. He's been very careful with his movements. The one time he was not was this past game when he snapped his Achilles. He's since had surgery. We'll see him in anywhere between 7 to 9 months. That's an 8-month injury minimum. We'll see how that works. But this brings up the argument again about Thursday night football games. Obviously, whenever your team either loses, or I'm talking about with fans, when a fan's team loses or when a player's team loses, it's immediately, well, we shouldn't be playing on such a short day. People always get hurt. And there's the always, and I used to really get behind this and really defend them and say, yeah, you know, I'm okay if they got rid of Thursday games. Then I looked into it. Not only are the statistics pretty much evenly across the board as far as when any player, let alone marquee players, but, you know, you look at Deshaun Watson, he was hurt during practice. Teddy Bridgewater, hurt during practice. J.J. Watt was during a game, but I don't think it was a Thursday game. I think his was a Sunday game. But it's all across the board. It's all evened out. For years, everybody's been playing – a handful of teams play on Thanksgiving, so these short games have always been that. You know, the players sometimes have problems when they have to go coast to coast to play or such things like this. I just want to throw this out here, and I got this from Pro Football Talk and Mike Florio, and I got this from Ross Tucker, a former player in the league who does a lot of media stuff as well. If they were to get rid of the Thursday night football games, let's say starting next year, they got rid of them, every team's payroll for players would go down about $7.5 million for the team total. Overall, this would technically not cost, because it's money that just they wouldn't earn. This would be technically lost revenue, money that each player should earn. On average, each player would make $135,000 less. So it would be interesting if you threw those numbers out to the players that if you're okay making, you know, a small percentage less, and you're okay that your team revenue or your team payroll is now down $7 million. Suddenly, big-time players wouldn't get the monster contracts they would like. You would see a lot more parity in the league because people would go everywhere. Where do you stand on this?
Well, if you're looking at numbers like that, Jeremy, it's interesting that you brought those numbers up, because if you're looking at 32 teams at $7 million, we're talking about roughly about, $227 million?
Yeah,
the league would save. So I don't think that has anything to do with the days of the week that you play. The other part of it that's not being factored in right now is that you have conflicts in the scheduling of your stadiums, and that's the other piece of this that's being left out of the equation as to why Thursday games are probably added on. Because again, when you have college football teams that play in certain stadiums, and those things factor in, the Thursday game factors. So, again, I don't think the Thursday night game is a curse because, again, we're talking about a violent sport. You know, football
right.
is controlled violence. So you can be hurt anytime. And I love the analogy that you put out about Deshaun Watson and some of the other players where they were in a non-contact situation and got hurt and had some
right.
season-ending injury. So I think that that's just kind of that's just one of those things that's just a wash for me. I think you play when you're scheduled to play, and you have the schedule early enough to know when you're going to play. So, again, you know, I don't think – if anything, I think if you want to talk about how to relieve some of the injuries, and I don't know how yet they do it, and I think the NFL is working on it, and that's with the preseason games. I think that's,
mm-hmm.
that's part of where you'll start working on that piece of it. And I think what they did this year, they didn't slow release players as much as they had to cumulatively release players, which allows for you to play more. It helps with a lot of the free agents because they naturally in camp a lot longer until
mm-hmm.
the duration of camp is over. That saves a lot of your players. It gives them opportunity to evaluate other players for an extended period of time. Maybe you just had a bad game. Maybe there was a miscue here and there, and you got the rest of the training camp to kind of resolve those issues. But, again, I don't think that removing Thursday games, I mean, for the owners, they'll probably say, okay, it's great. This is how much money we save across the board.
Right.
But for the players, I mean, it's not that much more money you're going to lose. And, again, you have to take in consideration all things. You know, if you're going to get rid of Thursday, then what's to say that Monday doesn't go away at that point? Because then now you
right.
must bring that to the table. You know, so it's kind of one of those things where I think it's more talked about than something that's going to ever grow legs and they ever get rid of the Thursday night game, just from what I was speaking of from the standpoint of the stadiums and the booking of those stadiums. I mean, it's not just football in a lot of these venues. So that's one of the other parts of it that kind of gets left out.
Right, and I got two other points to add to this. First of all, in the last year or so, when I hear former players speak, and a lot of them say, you know, about certain injuries and they're asked about, you know, if you could go back and do it again, would you still play? And every one of them goes, yeah, I knew what I was getting into when I signed up. It's a violent sport. And then also, this is something a lot of players don't realize, and this is why they elect player representatives who go and represent them who do understand these things. The players don't realize that if you go to the CBA negotiating table and you say, hey, we're no longer willing to play on Thursday nights, and you look at the other side, the owners in the league and such that look and go, okay, well, we're fine cutting out Thursday night games, but you know what? Now we're gonna really up HGH and steroid testing, or we're going to go to an 18-game regular season schedule. It's going to be a give or take one way or the other. So just thinking you're going to eliminate one thing and that's going to be it, you know, suddenly they say, well, you know, maybe, okay, if you don't want to play on Thursday, then we're going to be stricter on the marijuana laws or something like that as far as playing here. And that's just something they don't take into account.
Well, you know, like you said, I mean, it's so many factors involved. And like I said, just with the point of the Thursday night game, I think strictly that has a lot to do with the way that the venues are set up and the available dates. And I think that's
right.
why Thursday came to play. It was strictly – it wasn't anything to make life harder for the players, in my personal opinion. I think it's just a business situation. It's a business matrix there. I mean, everybody can't play on Sunday in all of their venues. Saturday is dominated by NCAA football in some
mm-hmm.
of those venues as well. So, and even without football, you have other tenants who have other things that are going on in those venues. Concerts would have, you know, i.e. concerts, circus, you know, just different things like that, monster truck,
right.
that would have you. So it's all about the availability of the dates. And, you know, although the NFL is a powerful, powerful business within itself, they don't control the market at large with everything. You know, you only have 8 home games. So a lot of times, you know, they have to just be as flexible with the venue as well as to the dates that they can play on. I think that is solely the purpose behind the Thursday game. I don't think that it'll ever go to the table of the players ever going to try to protest against a Thursday night game. Because, again, like I said, with that being the case, then you must now consider Monday night games. Why don't we play on
right.
Tuesday nights? I mean, if you're going to do that, then you're going to just open up the door for other things, and that's not going to work across the board. So I'm sure a lot of thought went into Thursday. I'm sure they discussed it before they added the Thursday games, because traditionally you had the Sunday and the Monday night games. But as, you know, again, as venues grow, more tenants come in, sports begin to overlap, then that's what brought about probably a lot of these changes and added the Thursday night.
Right, which part? I mean, for the most part, majority of the reason why they play on Thursday nights is because when the NFL started their own network, aka the NFL Network, they realized, well, if we're going to have our own network, we should be able to show games, and all the other games were kind of spoken for, so they had to kind of create their own day, as in Thursday, so that they could safely still have games, but also say, hey, we're NFL Network, and we show our own live games.
And I'm sure that was a part of it as well, probably the biggest piece of it of all.
Right. But, it's going to keep being a debate until the next CBA comes up. I don't think it's the biggest issue the CBA will revolve around. We'll get more into that in probably the next handful of weeks anyway. But sticking with the Seahawks, the Seahawks will more than likely be fined. I haven't fined yet. But they mishandled Russell Wilson and his potential concussion test. He took a shot. It was it wasn't really the crown of the helmet, so it wasn't for a penalty. But the part of the helmet of the defender hit him square in the jaw, and he took a pretty good shot and hit the deck. And as he got up, one of the referees that stands behind the quarterback stepped in, and he looked like he just said, "No, son, you need to go get checked." And he sent him off, which means you're supposed to go through the protocol. The backup came in, was running some plays. The backup actually ran one play, because the farthest into the concussion test that I saw Russell Wilson go into was the tent was not up yet. So when they put the pop-up tent up, which is the medical tent, he pretty much stuck his head in there and looked like, I don't have time for this, put his helmet back on. And for some reason, nobody stopped him. I don't know if somebody just didn't see him, but they're being investigated because somebody on their sideline, including the independent neurologist, should have said, he's not going anywhere till I talk to him.
And that's where technology will make a lie out of you. And I'm not saying that, you know, Mr. Wilson is, but that's where the eye in the sky will catch you and will not lie. And so that's why you have these protocols in place. I mean, they're there for a particular reason. Now, again, that's not taking anything from his competitive spirit. But, again, we
right.
can't, you know, players on the other side of this cannot argue about certain things if certain things are not followed. And in that case, I can very well see the NFL possibly fining Seattle for that, because, again, we don't know the severity of that injury. Like I said, these players are warriors, and all they you know, their threshold of pain is very, very high. They have a high tolerance. And so even if it was a concussion or not, he might not have even known, because, again, he's playing off a lot of adrenaline, a lot of excitement, and that's just how the game is played. But, again, when you're talking about situations like that, certain hits should automatically send you into protocol, whether or not the player – it's no different in boxing. You know, at some point,
right.
you have to keep a very, very close eye on that. And I do feel that there should have been probably a little bit more given to that situation to Mr. Wilson. I mean, you know, the protocol is there for a reason. We all know why that reason is there. It's clearly defined as to why you have to go through concussion protocol with a level of extension to that now. So to just kind of stick your head in and jump back in the game, whoever's responsible for that, overall, most definitely the NFL will visit that, I'm sure.
Well, and what made this such a rare case, because players do this all the time, what made this such a rare case, this is one of the rare few that we actually watched the referee step forward, tap him, look him in the face, and send him to the sideline. Most of the time, either a teammate or they stagger themselves or somebody from the sideline will grab them and go, no, you come here for a minute. This was the first time I've seen in a while that a referee actually dictated, no, you're not running a play, you need to go get checked, and watched him go to the sideline and then went back to the game of play. So, yeah, they'll probably be fined more than likely. It won't be anything more than a fine. It'll be a hefty fine, I believe, just to prove a point. But, you know, these players have got to realize Russell Wilson's a smart guy. He's starting to grow on me a good bit. He's a really good player in this league. He's got to realize, like you said, you can't make the argument down the road about injuries and head injuries if you do things like this.
Right, I agree. I mean, I get it. I mean, he's a great guy. and naturally, as just fans and as we talk about it, as players and coaches and whatnot, safety has to come first now. I mean, safety mm-hmm. has to be a priority, and it is a priority. And you, no matter who you are, no matter how tough you may be, you know, you still have to follow the rules when it comes to the protocol piece, because it is a very important piece of the safety of the players.
Exactly. We're going to run through these last three because I want to get to some Falcons before we get out of here. New England is playing Oakland this week, and they are playing in Mexico City. It is probably the feature 4 o'clock game. First of all, what do you think about the game being played in Mexico City? They played one last year. And then secondly, as a coach, what was more of the most non-standard place you played a game?
Well, we'll start with Mexico City. As we know, that the NFL has been heavily taunted by the UK and London with games there in Mexico City as well. So they're looking to possibly extend out at some given point in the future. That was one of the things mm-hmm. that NFL Europe was designed to do. The problem that they had with NFL Europe is that the players couldn't stay in Europe all year round, so they couldn't create a good base for the players
right.
to be there, but although they had the attendance. For myself, golly, I don't know. I have to think about that one, Jeremy. I have to really give that one some thought. But again, you know, I think that the NFL is doing a phenomenal job in extending the market into Canada. Is another place that they're looking to go as well. As far as we're talking about other countries that's looking to bring American style football into the fold. I think it'd be good for the league. I don't know how that would, you know, I'm sure they're looking at the forecast and they're trying to do a lot of data collecting to see if it's going to be something sustainable. I mean,
right.
everybody likes something new, but as something begins to get old or older, for the lack of better terms, then that base can fall off. And I don't know if the NFL can afford to have the brand jeopardized, for the lack of better terms, like that. So I think they're still looking at that for quite some time. At least another 5 years before they make a, you know, they really start considering whether or not they want to go outside of the United States with the brand on a permanent
right.
basis. So, but for right.
right
now, at least it allows them to go around globally and keep the brand, you know, most definitely put the brand out there in front of other places where they have other sports that are, you know, that are dominating. You know, as we know around the world, soccer is a global sport. So when you're talking about
right.
Mexico and places like that where they have soccer, to bring American style football in there, they love it because it's a change of pace, but will they love it enough for it to be sustained? And I think that's what the NFL is looking at. But in the meantime, going to London, going to Mexico City, going to Canada to play games, I'm all for that, just so that there's an extension of the brand.
Yeah, I agree, and I have a couple other ideas as far as that, but I will save them for next week because, like I said, I do want to get some Falcons here quickly. The Bills have benched – not really benched. They are letting Tyrod Taylor hang out for a while, and Nathan Peterman is going to start. In my opinion, this is just saying that Tyrod's contract's coming up. He's not our guy of the future. We appreciate everything he's done, but we need to see what we have out of this Nathan Peterman guy we drafted this year, so we know if we need to draft another quarterback. Do you see it another way?
No, I think that you're probably right about that. I think that's kind of the situation in Buffalo right now, and it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because if you just drafted a quarterback and then you're already in the hunt for another one, you don't want to find yourself heading down the same path, and again, there's no pun intended, like the Cleveland Browns. You don't want to start going through a bunch of quarterbacks over and over and over and never build a chemistry that you need. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that, if they're going to bring him back with the contract being up after this season and whatnot. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see what they do with it. But right now, I think everybody's starting to look at what they have, and they got to go out and look at those draft picks and see what they're capable of doing right now in the event of injury or whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something that just dropped just a handful of minutes ago. It appears that Larry Fitzgerald and the Arizona Cardinals are working on a one-year extension that would pretty much be for next season. Seems like Fitzgerald's not done, and I, for one, am very excited by that. He's by far one of the best receivers of the generation I've been watching, and he's just a super guy outside the game.
Yeah, I agree. That's great for him that they're going to be able to try to work an extension for him. Hopefully, you know, he's satisfied with what he gets, and the organization is just as satisfied as well. And it says a lot about them wanting to do that now.
I wonder if that means Carson Palmer's coming back for a year, too. But that's a debate for a different day. I want to get into some Falcons. Of course, they had the big win versus my Dallas Cowboys. That's fine. They had a great day. We had a bad day. There's no excuses going to come from me. We all know who played and who didn't. This win, as this year has taught us, usually when you get a big win during the season, it usually costs you something. Well, it cost the Falcons Devontae Freeman, who went out with a concussion early in the game. They're the most versatile at running back. It'll be Terron Ward and Tevin Coleman picking up the slack there. And this will also be Coleman's way to audition for the other 31 teams, because as his contract comes up, they gave all the money to Freeman. So I think, as we've agreed on this show, that Coleman's probably on his way out. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I agree. I think this is just an opportunity for him to audition for other teams in the league. Again, it depends on how the Falcons finish.
That's true.
If they find themselves in a close scenario that they had last year that put them in the Super Bowl, maybe he's willing to yield and wait another year. Maybe it's a wait-and-see moment. But the one thing that they do have with the fact that Freeman is down, they still have their 1-2 punch, and he's done a great job in filling those shoes since Freeman went out in that game. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see what he does, you know, as a starter, you know, popping back in as a starter again when they play this week. So we'll see. But right now, I would agree with you that it all points to him auditioning for other teams right now.
Right. And real quickly, back to the big win for Atlanta. If we take out Claiborne's big day of 6 sacks, he just completely destroyed Chaz Green. Chaz Green just – it was a terrible matchup. I don't know why Dallas – toward really late in the game, they started trying to chip him, but it didn't matter at that point. That's a debate for another day. And obviously if Coach Garrett was on, I would love to ask him that. Maybe he saw something I didn't, but if you take away the 6 sacks really past that, this game was pretty even. Dallas proved that just because Ezekiel Elliott's not playing doesn't mean that they can't do a running back by committee and get, I think they had 75 or 80 yards because they had to throw a lot towards the end. Dak was actually doing pretty well against this defense. It's just when it started going one-sided like that, Atlanta was able to take advantage. And as we know, Matt Ryan became the fastest player to 40,000 yards, which not only proves that, yeah, he does have talent. We always talk about he's a very talented guy. But across the board now on the show, we're pretty sure he's not going to get another contract from Atlanta, or it's not going to be as big as the market's going to dictate. But, you know, congratulations to Matt and congratulations to Falcons on this win.
Yeah, they did a very good job. The defense continued to do what they've been doing all year, and even from last year, they were consistent with their plays. They were turning around the 3-and-outs, and for the first time that I've seen this season, Atlanta began to take advantage of the 3-and-outs. I don't know if it had a lot to do with the fact that they were playing the Dallas Cowboys, you know, one of the most popular, if not the most popular team in the NFL. If it had something to do with the owners and their current situation, and the atmosphere, but Atlanta needed a win. They needed a win, and they needed a win like 2 games ago. So they're
right
now on the backside of their – on one of probably the toughest schedules that you're going to find in the NFL right now. I mean, I think they have Minnesota up next or the Seahawks up next and then Minnesota, which are still conference games that have a lot of impact. But then on the backside of that, they have all of the divisional games. So now,
right,
you know, Atlanta has to set the tone to go and – they pretty much they don't necessarily have to win out, but they're going to have to be close to winning out to put themselves in a position to be in the hunt and make playoffs without it just being a wild card scenario for themselves. So it's going to be interesting to see what Atlanta does in the next couple of weeks to put themselves back in position to be in the playoffs.
Oh, sure. This is real quickly everybody Atlanta will play from here on out. They play the Monday night game this week at Seattle. Then they host Tampa Bay and Minnesota. They also host New Orleans. Then they go to Tampa. They go to New Orleans. Then they host Carolina. They are the only one of 2 teams to only play 1 divisional game up to this point, which will actually work out in their favor because it pretty much means winning the division is in their hands. Do you happen to know what the other team is that's only played one divisional game?
I cannot say that I know off the top of my head, Jeremy.
If I told you they beat the Falcons last year for the Super Bowl, would that help?
Wow, the Patriots.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that.
Yep, I just saw it myself, which means that division is pretty much over because they dominate their division. And I think this is the Falcons' best chance because when the NFC South plays each other, you throw the records out the window, and it's usually some of the closest, best games you've ever seen. By far, this is the best division in football. They've had a representative in the Super Bowl the last 2 years. They've had the reigning MVPs the last 2 years. And this year they have 2 7-win teams and the Falcons at 5-4 that are knocking on everybody's door with the schedule we just talked about. So, you know, nobody else has an argument, in my opinion, as far as best division.
Right. And here's something I would like to find out as a footnote. I wonder where else in the NFL history of such setups with the games has that ever been the case where the team that won the Super Bowl and the team that lost in the Super Bowl had that same type of scheduling? Is this
right.
The first time that it's ever happened?
I feel like it probably hasn't, but it's probably very rare. It's just probably based on their algorithm or whatever fancy thing they come up with that it just happened to happen this way. Or, we can go ahead and throw that conspiracy theory out there. It's not that far-fetched that maybe the Super Bowl teams kind of get a little bit of a nod the next year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see as we move forward with scheduling and the way they do the scheduling now, if that will happen again next year or the year after.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting. Now, I did also hear that the Falcons coaching staff has said that they want to use defensive tackle Dontari Poe more on offense. They've used him, I believe, on the line, and they may have even used him as a fullback once or twice. What do you think about swapping players over from defense to offense for these special plays?
Well, it's not uncommon. If you go back and look at William the Refrigerator Perry that played with the Chicago
right.
Bears, that was something that was used in the past. And, again, one of the secret weapons that New England possesses is that most of their players make the team because they do something else. As to why you don't ever hear them gasp about injuries or suspensions for that matter. They just move on through the schedule. So if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Poe did some of that when he was in Kansas City. Again, don't hold me to that, but I think that he did have some multiple roles there. They were limited roles, but, again, he did some multiple work there. So it's not uncommon when you look at players like David Hester when he was in the league that played receiver a lot for Chicago as a kick returner.
Right.
So, and Deion Sanders lined up a couple of times, I think, as a wide receiver. Don't know if he made any plays on that side. Can't recall that. But, again, a lot of times you're just putting things in there. So it wouldn't be unsurprising for him to do it because, again, it's not like it's something he hasn't already done before.
Right. You know, Deion likes to carry around the nickname Mr. Five Downs because he would give you 3 on defense, 1 on special teams, and at least 1 on offense. So I feel like he made a couple catches. I don't have it on me, and I really doubt we'll get that stat looked up for we get to the end. But yeah, we've seen, like you said, the thing people don't realize about Refrigerator Perry is when he ran that in during the Super Bowl, that the other option as far as a running back was Walter Payton, who did not have a rushing touchdown during that Super Bowl.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, there's somebody, I don't know if it was him or not, but somebody was a little sore about that whole thing that, you know, they were excited that their team and their teammate did well, but they're kind of like, that guy's all world. Why don't we hand it to him?
Well, I think it's kind of hard to stop a 360-pound running back. I haven't seen it happen often. So
I mean, literally, he's part grizzly bear, part refrigerator running, and he had a 5-yard head start running at you. I'm gonna pretty much step aside and let him have it.
Yeah. He had quite a few touchdowns, as a matter of fact, in his career doing that.
He
so,
did.
Again, it's just a blast. It's a blast from the past, and I wouldn't be surprised if Atlanta starts using some of that in their red zone. It might be part of their, their secret weapons as they move toward the, the last of the, the divisional games or even into the playoffs. Don't be too surprised
yep.
to see that.
Exactly, because I've noticed that Dan Quinn and his coaching staff are not afraid to take chances sometimes. But last thing, we left off last week. You were on the front part of the show, and Reggie joined us a little late. And I threw this out to Reggie, and I threw it out to you and Cody over the week as well, since I have you on here. I'm going to try to throw out things, kind of teasers towards the next show. Things will kind of kick off and start about. I threw out that is Lamar Jackson a potential quarterback of the future for the Falcons, given that we think Matt Ryan may not be re-signed or Matt Ryan probably has 2 to 3 peak years left, and then, his contract's going to come up in the middle of that, so we'll see. But is Lamar Jackson the guy that we think the Falcons may turn to? Based off where they're going to finish right now, he's sitting about right there in the first round of the draft. What do you know about Lamar Jackson, and what do you think about him being the future Atlanta quarterback?
He's a phenomenal athlete. He's proven himself in college. He can make all the throws now. As a college athlete, I've seen him over the last 2 years at Louisville. The concern with him would be his size right now. He's a little underweight for where you would want him to be in the league. And also, he carries a lot of the attributes of a Michael Vick, or Mike Vick. So he's a Vick type player. Will Atlanta make a move on him? Jury is still out because, again, they are also in the market for a quarterback. Would he fit in Atlanta's system? Is he mature enough to come to an Atlanta and buy into the philosophy of what Coach Quinn has in place now? I think so. It would not surprise me. Let me say that much. If Atlanta decided to go that way, there are not a lot of quarterbacks coming out of college football right now that are out there that are going to be those type of caliber players. I like him over in Louisville. I like the quarterback over at the University of Oklahoma, who name slipped me right now. But those are the two top guys I see right now in college football that can make the transition right now. And, again, the question is going to be, what does Atlanta do to put themselves in that position to get him? Does his stock go up now when you look at other situations if quarterbacks are not panning out? Does Cleveland take him, as they've been known to do a lot over the last, couple of drafts in pulling quarterbacks? So it's going to be interesting. But do I feel that he could fit an Atlanta scheme, and do I feel that he could fit into an Atlanta and be that type of viable player? Absolutely. I would not be surprised if Atlanta made a move for him. It wouldn't surprise me. It just wouldn't surprise me. But again, we're a long way away from the draft. Right now they're focusing on the season. They have to see how they're realistically going to finish. But it wouldn't be surprising to me, no. It would not surprise me if Atlanta decided to say, hey, let's go ahead and grab us a young quarterback and start building on the future again.
And then I can actually help you with two of the things you brought up during that. You say he's a little underweight. Well, we all live in the local Atlanta area, everybody, but Cody, obviously. And we know how some of the great food and destination restaurants we have here. I don't think putting weight on this kid will necessarily be a bad thing if he's in Atlanta. It's pretty easy for us to put weight on going to some of these places. But and then the ultimate test, if you want to know if a quarterback is going to be really good to potential great, is if Cleveland doesn't pick them, because every time they pass on a quarterback in the last 3 or 4 years, they've turned out to be really good.
So that's going to be very interesting as well to see what they do at the end of the season. But Lamar Jackson by far is a viable player, and I can see his stock rising. He's done a lot in the last 2 to 3, the last 2 years that he's been, 2 to 3 years that he's been at Louisville, and he's already proven himself now. So I think everybody's kind of quietly watching him, and moms is the word. I don't think anybody wants to come out publicly and say that they're looking at him right now. But trust me, he's that quarterback of probably maybe four throughout the NCAA right now that everybody's, making second notes, third notes, fourth notes about right now. Trust me.
All right, and I got two baseball notes before we get out of here. But And then I'll do the two baseball notes. Then I'll do the teaser, Falcons related teaser. It'll make us all four have to do a little bit of homework. But I think it's something that Atlanta needs to think about. We're going to talk draft related stuff just because, at least for this week. But the two notes, Jose Altuve of the Astros, the world champion Astros, was named NL MVP. I don't have a problem with that because they gave Rookie of the Year to – or he was AL MVP. Yeah, AL MVP. And I don't have a problem with that because the other guy up for it was Yankees, Aaron Judge, who had a fantastic rookie campaign, but they gave him Rookie of the Year. They'll swap this award for the next handful of years. And then Max Scherzer won Cy Young for the – third or fourth time. He's won it in both the American and National leagues. And for everybody who thinks that the Nationals overpaid him when they brought him to Washington, he just continues to win Cy Young awards. So kind of hard to argue a big contract when he keeps winning awards.
I agree. I mean, he's won it on both sides. So
yeah,
I mean, he's consistent with it.
Yeah. You can't say, well, he was just NL or, oh, he was just AL. No, he's been on both sides and won it on both sides. So you can't say anything there. This will be, like I said, this Falcons teaser will be something, you know, something for us to think about. We won't weigh in on it right now, but when we pick up, it's looking like possible Tuesday, but we're still talking about that because of the holiday as to when we do Sports Club next week. But, given there's a handful of decent tight ends that'll be in this draft coming up. We've obviously seen Hooper is kind of up and down. Toy Lolo is a better offensive lineman than he is pass catcher. Is this the year the Falcons make a move and try to bring in a big-time tight end? It doesn't have to be a Gronk-related guy, but maybe a Zach Ertz-type guy out of college. And if so, which college tight end do you think it's going to be? Like I said, we won't weigh in this time. We'll look into it a little bit, but go ahead.
Well, it's very early again. It depends on what positions they want to address. It depends on where they fall in the draft. It depends on what Atlanta does to buy up in the draft or buy down in the draft, for that matter, giving up some positions right now. So I think it's very early to say, but it is a position that they're going to have to address again at some given point. I think right now they do have the 1-2 combination of a more offensive lineman type, in the one tight end and a more receiving type in the other.
Right.
And again, you know, we don't know what the offense is going to bring about. It will always carry a tight end in it, but it might carry a bigger receiver at tight end. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do at that position. But again, right now, I think their biggest question mark is what they're going to do at quarterback, knowing that Mr. Ryan is on the table in another 2 years. And I think that now is the time to start looking at addressing that before they get to the point of he's a year left. We have the option. We're still negotiating. We're talking about if he's willing to restructure because, you know, that, like you said, it's going to put him well over into the $200 million range. And I don't know if Atlanta really wants to do that, given in consideration you have some other positions that you're going to have to get some depth at. So quarterback is one of the things that's always, in my personal opinion, has been Atlanta's Achilles heel, and I don't mean that in a negative way. They've never had a viable backup. I think the closest they've gotten to that was when they had Chandler and they brought Vic in. But, again, it's always on the back end of that quarterback's career. And I think at some point for Atlanta to stay competitive, they have to address, are we going to have two quarterbacks in here, not necessarily to compete against each other for the starting position, but if we lose our starter? Because right now, if you lose Matt Ryan, I mean, Schaub has done it in the past. You know, he's been a starter in the past. But I think that has always been one of those things where that position has been secured in Atlanta versus challenged in Atlanta. And I think it's always good to have healthy competition, as we saw with Keenum and with Bridgewater. You know, that situation is playing itself out. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see what Atlanta does. But I think they have to address first that quarterback position and then look elsewhere after that.
But that's everything we got this week. Appreciate you calling in, Coach. It's always great having you on. I think we got through everything. I think there's some other things I want to get to later, but like I said, we'll get to those. You know, Mark Cuban apparently said some more things about the NFL. I haven't seen his comments yet. It was texted into me as we started this show, so I want to look more into what Cuban said before I say one thing or the other, and obviously we'll all compare notes on that. But can you think of anything else?
Yes, I would like to congratulate Mr. Claiborne on his 6 sacks against the Cowboys. He did a phenomenal job of showing what that position looks like, and when you have a pass rusher that's having a great day, what can be accomplished.
Yeah, he actually, I forgot about that, he actually triggered some things in his contract and got a bonus out of it. So, hey, if they give you the, if you're given a matchup that you can dominate, I'm very glad that, Adrian Claiborne's able to take advantage of that, even though it was against my team. Like I said, I make no excuses. Atlanta outplayed them. Dallas had a terrible day. You know, best team won that day. So I have no problem there. Congratulations to Claiborne again.
I agree. Great job, Bob.
Absolutely. But, like I said, that's going to do it for us this week. For the coach, Haywood Hill, for the I think Reggie's in Tampa, and last time I checked, he is in Tampa potentially seeing if Dirt Cutter needs any help moving his stuff. But that's another thing for another day. We will see you, and for Cody in the Bay Area, who is still gushing over Jimmy Garoppolo, one day he'll calm down enough and join us on the show. But for the coach, I'm Jeremy the Impact York. We will see you guys next week. Go Falcons. I can tell, told me I'm too fair. Y'all looking at something like a true player. A girl told me that a man that can dance might could possibly get down with the tool in his pants. Now I'm a lady, let me see it vibrate. And when it's over, you ain't gonna need your bird. Cause I'm a pro, make you bend your back low, then the pound it real fast, just like the percolator. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah.
Was that not clear without the bam? Yeah, okay. Bam! What?